When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer, and joining me today is Ian Doyle. How are we, Ian?
Tired.
Yeah. Theo Squires, how are you?
I'm refreshed. I had a day off yesterday.
Great, yeah. Well, Liverpool are top of the league, 5 points clear after a really, really good performance at Bournemouth. Ian, you were there.
Yeah.
That's why you're tired.
Very. But
at least are you a little bit energised by a very good second half performance?
I was energised before the game by when we walked into the stadium, we got given a free penguin. Which was very, very nice. Also, they were all penguins in red wrappers, which is, they're obviously bespoke penguins made just for, unless somebody bought a load of penguins and just went through and took out all the red ones and said, let's give them to all the journalists.
On the door as you went.
Yeah, so there's your pass. Do you want a programme? Oh, by the way, here's a penguin.
That's amazing.
What was the joke? I want to know the joke.
You know what? I didn't look because I was that hungry by that point. I just ate it. I thought, I'll have that at half time and ate it straight away.
That's lovely. More clubs should give out free penguins on the door. I think we went to Bournemouth together all those years.
We did.
We didn't get a penguin, but I liked Bournemouth.
It reminded me of my own little, during lockdown, where I would bring the club, Orange Club biscuits and pass them around the other journalists. So it was a nice little touch there, I thought. Lovely. Everybody loves a little bit of a, everyone loves to pick up a penguin, because they say, thank you.
Well, I'm very pleased for you. I'm also very pleased with Liverpool, who won 4-0. Can you talk to us about the game?
I can. So after that delight, there was a bit of a downer with the first half performance, which I know we spoke about it in the office before. It wasn't brilliant, but it wasn't terminal, shall we say. Like, it was never, you know, they were never really in a lot of trouble, but they didn't massively convince, let's be honest. Certainly some times where they just couldn't clear the ball for some reason. They were trying a bit too much at various times and weren't trying enough in the right areas. And they should possibly, Bournemouth should have had a player sent off. I know we'll get onto that in a bit. But second half, Klopp made a few changes, moved players around, had a look at what Bournemouth were doing. And I always think that when you've got an opposition manager like Areola, who came out after the game and basically was asked about the game, and rather than say, oh, Bournemouth were rubbish, which he's the second half, he said, look, first half we did this, that and the other, which is what he wanted to do. But then the minute Liverpool scored, we just stopped doing it. And then they ran away with it. He was saying how great Liverpool are. He said, we looked at their game, second halves, they're amazing. Mm-hmm. He said the second half performances have just been so good. They're very, very clinical. And even though they got a lot of players out, they're still able to select players who can get the job done and play at that standard. So the second half, I thought Liverpool played very, very well. I thought a lot of players who, you look at someone like, for example, Joe Gomez, didn't have a particularly great first half, but he didn't let it bother him. And I know we've spoken quite a bit. He didn't make any individual mistakes, but we've spoken a bit about Gomez. Sometimes in the past, he's had problems. Mm-hmm. It looks like he's had problems mentally, but didn't let it bother him. It wasn't just him. There was others who stepped up. I thought, you know, look at Kanate, look at Van Dijk. They were very good throughout the course of the game. The forwards, obviously, they scored the goals, two for Nunes, two for Jota. Gakpo came on, made a bit of a difference.
Yeah, I thought he did well.
But then you've got someone like Alexis McAllister, who in the first half in particular, he was the one who was, I wouldn't say keeping it all together, but he was the one who was giving Liverpool that bit of drive and a bit of determination. We wanted to get them moving when a lot of the others were, as Klopp said, you know, we like having a break. We need it. We need to rest. But when we come back from these breaks, we tend to lack a little bit of rhythm, which is funny because it's only been 10 days since they played. It's not like it was 3 weeks, but it just goes to show, as we said in the last podcast, that Klopp loves his rhythm, and that's an example of why. So McAllister was very, very good. As I said, it wasn't just him. The second half, you know, if you're going to go to a team that's taken 22 points out of 30, they won 3-0 at United before Christmas. They've had good results since then. They played well, and you could see in the first half as well why they've done well. They had, I thought they did quite well, Bournemouth, certainly early on with Liverpool's press. They managed to get around it, either by playing through quick passes or playing the ball over the top. They tried to get in a couple of times. But yeah, second half, Liverpool just showed the difference between the teams. To go anywhere in the Premier League and win 4-0 is a good result. To go to someone like Bournemouth, who is such in form, who also, they'd had a two-week rest, was it, I think? I think they'd had a two-week rest. They didn't have any problems with rhythm, did they? But the longer the game went on, Liverpool wore them down and deserved to win. And you might argue, probably the performance of the season so far.
Yeah, I think so. Before I continue, thanks for listening. If you are listening to us live on YouTube or on Facebook, please leave a question in the comments and we'll try and get round to it. Our producer will drop them in the chat to me, and I'm keeping an eye on the YouTube chat. And just give us a like, subscribe, press the little bell button. Thanks very much for listening. But yeah, no, just to pick up, first of all, in the first half, I thought the first half performance was okay. I thought first sort of 10 minutes, Bournemouth had a little go, which you expect from a home side. And then Liverpool got a foothold. I thought they moved themselves up the pitch and played on the halfway line, which I think when you're playing against a team like Bournemouth who aren't as good as you, you play there and you wear them down. And I kind of think that's what Liverpool did. And obviously they got the rewards in the second half. And secondly, I do think it was a very impressive performance because these are the types of games that title winners, and I'm not saying I think Liverpool will win the title, but I certainly think they'll challenge, go and win, and they win them.
Well, Arsenal won 4-0 there. Yeah, but that was early in the season when Bournemouth weren't quite at the level they are now.
So I thought it was really impressive in that respect. Theo, what impressed you most about it, and what did you think of the two halves and the way they contrasted?
I think I side with you more on the overall team performance. Mm-hmm. They survived the early wave. Bournemouth started really well. And as Doyley said, it looked like Liverpool just couldn't get out of the box. Yeah. They couldn't get hold of possession. But then they did put a foot on it. And when they got hold of the ball, they were passing it around really well. They were a bit sloppy in the final third. The passes weren't quite there. The touch wasn't quite mm-hmm. there. But they didn't let it phase them. They just went again. They got the ball back, kept passing it around, and they were really patient. McAllister was key to that. Yeah. Like so many times, you know, that's a really good tackle there to win it back, get it forward, hold off the challenges. Mm-hmm. And then the second half, it was just creating the chances and taking them. Really quick passing for the first goal. Like you think back to the United game where it didn't feel like Liverpool were going to score. There was none of that against Bournemouth. It was just waiting for that first goal, knowing that the victory should come here because they were that much in control. And there were so many good individual performances. I thought Konate was really good. McAllister was really good. A really solid Premier League debut for Conor Bradley. Mm-hmm. Nunes, he needed a couple of goals and he was lively throughout. Wasn't really fazed by the earlier air kick, was it, when he was trying to replicate the little back heel he did against Fulham on his Premier League debut. Jota, a quiet first up half, but then he steps up second half. Mm-hmm. It's the sort of performance that, when you're a Liverpool point of view, you always look at Man City going, they always go and do that in these tough places. Yeah. They just step up and get it done, put a few goals past them. So for Liverpool to put that in, they've got the confidence now and they're doing this without 10 first-team players. Imagine what they're going to be doing in 6 weeks' time when these 10 players are back and we are in the running and they are going for four trophies, fingers crossed. It's certainly a step in the right direction. They've got that rhythm there, even if it took them a half to properly get going and get the goals.
Yeah, I mean, you and I did predict score draws, which one listener helpfully reminded us. But that's why I thought it was so impressive, Ian, because like these are the type of games that I think they are tough. And we probably going in, I probably would have taken a point because I think if you get through these games, the point is not so bad. But to win the title, you have to do a bit more. And they did that. Do you see it as a bit of a statement that Liverpool are here to stay in this title race?
I mean, yes, and also no. I think yes in the sense that I think we mentioned on Friday about this is three games that are going to be pivotal, Bournemouth away, Chelsea at home and Arsenal away. And if they get 6 points, as long as they don't lose to Arsenal, they've got a good return. Well, they've already got three straight off.
Yeah.
Chelsea, obviously, that's not for another week. Is week yet? It's another, more than a week, isn't it? Yeah, it's midweek because they've got two cup games. That's right, yeah, deadline day. So there's a little bit to go before we start looking at that one. But it just seems as though Liverpool... Okay, I know the five-point lead is slightly false because City have got a game in hand, but it is 5 points on Arsenal and 5 points on Villa and 8 points on Tottenham. And I think it was, is it 19 or 21 points on Newcastle or something stupid like that?
How many you have a dig at?
No, I'm not having a go. I'm just saying is that at the start of the season, with the exception, obviously, of Villa, these are teams that you think Liverpool are going to be in and around them. And they're obviously way clear of at least, you know, two of them. So you can't really criticise them for that. In terms of like a statement victory, they've just gone 1-4-0 at Bournemouth, who Liverpool and Bournemouth were the two form teams over the last 10 games. So yeah, of course it is. It's not quite winning 4-0 at Leicester on Boxing Day when they were second in the league.
But
you know, Liverpool, they don't win games 4-0 away very often.
Yeah.
And it's... And I know that Bournemouth, I wouldn't say helped them. I mean, Bournemouth were clean through twice, weren't they, towards the end, and missed two chances. So it's not, you know, it's not as if they didn't have their opportunities, but obviously the game was done by them.
And so you look at the opportunities, though. They kept Solanke so quiet. And he
Well, it's the thing, everything you play, everything they play everything off him. And when he's in form, as we've seen, is that I think there's only... Is there only Ireland who scored more goals than the Premier
Ireland
League?
Ireland Salah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're slagging up more now. Yeah, well... The fact that he's up there with those two tells you what a good season he's having. And Liverpool did keep him quiet, and there wasn't anything for them to play off. To be fair, that was the problem with Jota in the first half, wasn't it? Everything was bouncing off him. I think I put my ratings. He may as well been a trampoline. Everything was, you know, just bouncing off him, which was sounded better when I actually wrote it. I just teed it up there badly, didn't I? Yeah. Which obviously got deleted, I think, by the time the game had finished. So get rid of that. So, yeah, I don't, there's no complaints. I mean, the only worry is obviously Curtis Jones coming off with an injury. Klopp said after the game, he said, look, Curtis is an experienced player. That made me laugh, that actually. He's 22. but, you know, he's experienced enough to know 3-0 up. He'd felt a twinge on an injury that he was already carrying, it turns out. And they'll, we know most footballers, certainly this time, they've got one or two things. You know, they'll have something wrong with them, which they're carrying on through. But there's so many big games coming up. Liverpool can't afford to lose anyone else, so... The only down thing would be him. And also the drive home, which was...
Which was scary, I believe.
It was extremely scary, more than 30 years driving. That's the most genuinely petrified of being driving.
Worse than Sheffield United?
He was worse than Sheffield United, yeah. That was bad, coming over Snake Pass in the middle of the night. But this was like, the rain was coming down, it was windy, you couldn't see anything. And there were literally cars just stopping on the side of the road going, I've had enough of this, I'm just going to wait until it passes over. But we couldn't because we had to get back here for this podcast.
Yeah, well, you do know, Ian, when you drive through a storm, you can hold your head up high.
You can, yeah.
So I'm quite happy with that. I didn't even laugh.
It's better than the Ghana one the other day, I'll give you that.
Oh, come on, that was good.
That
right,
was good. No.
Yeah, I've lost my train of thought now because of that. Diogo Jota was someone that we spoke about in the pre-match pod. And again, this listener did say to me, he said, I don't like Jota from the start. I don't always like Jota from the start. And I think first half...
Yeah, that kind of showed it a little bit, didn't it? Yeah.
He sometimes, it's the way he turns on the ball quite often in our own half and gives it away. And he does that quite often. But his finishing is so sharp, isn't it, Theo? And I think Carragher said after the game, he's one of, if not the best finisher, just purely finishing, that he's seen at Liverpool. Obviously, Robbie Fowler is probably the other one, and we mentioned him. But where does he rank? What do you think? I mean, I find it hard to believe that he ranks higher than Fowler, because Fowler's finishing was just a supreme finisher. But I mean, Jota just has this brilliant knack, doesn't he, of finding the goal from any angle and finding those little positions that gets him tap-ins, that gets him shots across the face of goal, those types of different goals that you associate with a really good finisher.
We showed that with his second one, wasn't it, when he air-kicked it and then still managed to put it right across the corner, the perfect striker's finish. He's certainly up there, but I think he's still a one in three, isn't he? Like, he never plays every single game. You rely on him to get a goal. We've said on these podcasts before, if he plays in the United game or the Arsenal at home game, Liverpool win and he probably scores. He is still that player where you need a goal, you want him on the pitch. When Nunes has missed a couple or Gakpo's not getting in the box, Jota's the one you turn to. Salah, obviously, he's a record speaks for itself, but you still think Jota's the prime finisher here. He's the one who takes his chances. It's strange to say of a player who went a year without scoring. He's obviously taken time to get back to his level after injuries, but now we're seeing the level we were seeing from him first half of the 21-22 season, when he was like scoring goals to put Liverpool in the League Cup finals, and he was deserving to start in that team ahead of Roberto Firmino. He's an amazing finisher. He's never going to be right at the very top of those lists, because he isn't this player who's going to be your first name on your team sheet. but as long as he scores the goals when he gets the chances, it's what you want to see. He's capable of missing them as well, which is a trait, I think, of like Michael Owen back in the day. When he was on form, everything went in. Yeah. When he wasn't on form, it was a really long goal-scoring drought. Nothing fell for him. Jota's maybe similar to that without quite the pace, but he's got that clinical instinct in front of goal. You know he's going to score when that ball drops to him.
Yeah, I think Jota really thrives when Liverpool have worn a team down and those little pockets of space start to open up in the box. And that's when he seems to just find those positions. It was great seeing him for his second goal, you know, the air kick and then subsequent finish. You see him drop back and you can see him screaming at Conor Bradley, who did really well to find him, to pass him the ball. But yeah, I think he thrives in a Liverpool team that's functioning really well. Would you think that's fair to say?
Well, that's why when you talk about great finishes, he probably is very good at finishing, but he's not a great striker as quite a lot of other players, because it's not just about putting the ball in the net, even though that's the end result, but it's about getting into those positions and just how you fit into the team ethic. And I think you're right that Liverpool need to be proper functioning for Jota. But what I would say about Jota, though, is I don't think I've seen a player in a long time just who's always just looks desperate, his desire to actually score a goal, which that was the second one. It's like when he missed it, if you actually watch the replay, he just absolutely launches himself at it. It's like he's falling over, sliding into it to just try and get there. And a lot of his goals are like that. It's like you go, well, I can't believe he just scored that, which is not quite the same as being a great finisher in that sense, in the sense that if, say, he's one-on-one with a goalkeeper, we know this because you got the likes of, I don't know, Nunes going back, Heskey going back, Cisse. The number of times they go clean through on the goalkeeper and you think, he's probably just going to blast this straight at him, which is invariably what they would tend to do quite a lot.
Yeah.
But with someone like Fowler, you'd always think he's going to score. I think in that sense, Jota's somewhere in the middle. You would expect him to finish it, but as Theo said, he does have these spells where he misses one, then he misses 10.
Yeah.
But in terms of the actual desire or just wanting to get into that position to actually have the chance to score the goal, I don't think I've ever seen a Liverpool player quite like it.
The best thing about his second goal was the Bournemouth fans when he air kicks it and they go, well, way, and they're still saying way when it goes in.
They'd already done that with Nunes, hadn't they? Yeah. Well, they'd done it with Nunes in November when he miscontrolled it. They were like, hey, and then he just curls it in. It reminded me of Alonso scored a free kick at Hull. No, he didn't score from a free kick at Hull. He hit the wall, came back to him, and he just absolutely launched it back into the goal. So
yeah, well, but the best one of them was Alonso from the halfway line, which I'm pretty sure against Luton, but I'm pretty sure they started weighing as it rolled.
Because they thought he'd missed it, and it's like it curled back in. Well, Kiefer Moore had that chance, didn't he, like that yesterday, but didn't really go anywhere near the goal.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I really liked about Jota's performance yesterday, Theo, was you could see him sort of stepping up, and as one of the more senior players, he was a bit of a crank. He was moaning at his teammates and telling them to sort of raise their levels. And I remember they were 4-0 up near the end and someone misplaced a pass and you could see him, Liverpool could have broken it. You could see him immediately turn and sort of give them a little bit of, come on, you know, higher standards than that. And I think one of the most impressive things about yesterday and why I think it might be the most impressive win of the season so far is just that they had so many players out injured, but to a man, they stepped up. And you know, Konate, you mentioned it before, thought was brilliant. Jota, excellent. Bradley, I mean, grew into the game, but also just showed the maturity, which I thought was really, really impressive. Van Dijk, his levels this season have been through the roof, and he continues yesterday. Gomez continues. I'm going through the whole team, but you see what I mean. But one of those players that I haven't mentioned yet and that I wanted to use this as a segue to was Darwin Nunes, who I think we watch him every week and we know how dangerous he is. Opposition fans see their clips and they see the air kicks and they take the pee. And Bournemouth fans obviously don't learn, but that is Darwin Nunes when he puts it all together, isn't it? And that's why he's such a huge asset to this Liverpool team and to this title charge.
Yeah, definitely. I think I did a piece, it went up Sunday morning, and like, you just felt that this was going to be a game for him to silence the critics. Like, it was last week, was it Ned Manua who was saying Liverpool fans are turning on him, they're losing patience? No, they're not.
They
know he's a raw finisher. They know he doesn't score everything that falls his way. They know there's going to be the missed chances, but he makes things happen. Like, it's what, one goal in 16 games before this one since he scored the absolute worldie at Bournemouth when he came on and won that game. But he's got so many assists in that run. He was in a really good hot run of form then, scoring goals and games successively for club and country. But he's going to go up and down in spells. But then when it does fall, he doesn't let it faze him. like the fact that he missed a couple of chances, he's still going to go and get another chance. He's still going to create something. If he doesn't score, he'll set it up. Like, it was his run into the box that leads to Jota's second goal, even if the cross was a bit overhit. But he's a very popular player because of that work rate, because it doesn't face him, because he keeps going. And all defenders say he's the one you'd hate to face it because he just has a bit of everything. He's got the pace, he's got the power, he's got the attitude. Personally, I love the booking he got as well. I know it's not brilliant. The Bobby Clark one where it was everything's riding on this, you need to put this tackle in because they're 4-0 up. But still, he puts in a vital tackle at a time to stop the attack. He's getting
it wasn't even a tackle, was it? He just went bang and just knocked the lad over, which I love that too. I thought that summed up the Nunes channeling his chaos into
the right way,
positive way.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
But he's one of these players, like the younger generation, because they've now lost Henderson, they've lost Milner, they've seen Ronaldo go, Fabinho go, all these players that were leading the levels. Mm-hmm. The younger ones are stepping up. As you mentioned there with Jota, we've seen it with Trent. He wants to be a senior player now. He doesn't want to be the academy graduate. Konate said it before the Bournemouth game, saying how he wanted to be a leader in the defence when they played Arsenal. I think C. Nunes is similarly doing the same thing without being able to speak English very well. Like, they're all stepping up together, and it's what makes this team so popular, because they are still very early on in their journey, but they're taking responsibility. And after the dismal performances we saw last year, it's suddenly all falling their way.
Ask you, I've got some questions, but ask you about Nunes first. Obviously, what did you make of his performance? And you obviously wrote your snap on him. Then Bournemouth fans just not seeming to get the memo with Nunes.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken quite a bit, obviously, on this podcast. I mean, okay, right. I saw a stat on Twitter just before. Sorry. Nobody called the least successful rebrand ever. How on earth has he got all his money? Because he's just clearly... Anyway, I need to be quiet now because he'll probably just buy this podcast in time. You're out. Yes, I saw something that said that, well, Nunes has scored 25 goals for Liverpool since arriving. Mm-hmm. So, and I think he's got 101 career goals now. So basically a quarter of his career goals have been at Liverpool. I know he's only 24, but he's played for four clubs now, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And his country. But the stat was that since he arrived at Liverpool, he scored more goals than Saka, Martinelli or Jesus in all competitions. That's, I think,
and that was this year's title winning front three.
That's not finished yet. Come on. Right, so
at Luton. What's
so that was quite... And I know that, okay, Liverpool this season have been in the Europa League, but I don't think he scored that many goals in the Europa League, has he?
He got one at last
game. I can't think of any more. But he wants to.
Maybe one more.
Yeah, possibly. Sure. But even so.
Gakpo's the one who scored more.
Yeah, even so, he's scored a lot, most of his goals either Champions League or the league or the domestic cup. So there's not that much difference in that. In fact, Arsenal were in the Europa League last year, weren't they? Who we're talking about. So that kind of negates it. So that does show you that he obviously knows where the old onion bag is, as old people say, ruffle the onion bag. But his finish has just made me laugh. I mean, because yesterday, the second one was completely unorthodox, just wanted to get something on it. Good finish. But his first one, going back to what I was saying about about Cisse and Eski and everybody like that, you just thought, he's going to absolutely hammer this. But just calmly just strokes into the bottom corner with his right foot. It was a very what you would think would be an un-Nunes-esque goal, which is a very long and made-up word. But if you can do a bit more of that, he'd score loads more. Yeah. So they basically show that he can do it. It's just getting it all together. And yeah, for all the reasons that we've said before, he's just now getting into that groove. I still think, going back to the Newcastle game at the start of the season, was massive for Liverpool, massive for Newcastle, and massive for him.
Yeah,
I think that was one of the most pivotal games of this season, probably the Premier League season, full stop.
Yeah, fair play. There's another good stat that I saw yesterday from Michael Reid. Darwin Nunes has 10 goals, 10 assists and 31 appearances this season. It's only the fifth time a player has hit 10 goals and assists for Liverpool this soon into a Premier League era. So Gerrard took 29 appearances in 07-08. Steven Gerrard took 30 appearances, 13-14. In the same year, Suarez took 23 appearances. Salah in 21-22, 31. And then Darwin Nunes this year, 31. But I think that speaks to, again... Opposition fans might see that the air kicks and the misses, but that speaks to his overall influence.
He's the first Premier League player to get to 10 and 10 this season.
And the added to that is, it's not just the goals that he immediately set up or scored, but yesterday he had a hand in all four, because you say he made the run down the left for one of them, and then the other one was the ball drop in, which he sort of like just ran in over their defender, didn't he? So he just is central, I think, to everything good Liverpool do at the moment. Another good performance yesterday. Some questions from listeners. First of all,
Are they viewers or listeners?
Listeners, viewers, they're viewers.
I suppose they are listening. They're definitely listening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Depends if it's you or me talking.
There's some good penguin chat in the chat.
Come on, what is it? Come
someone
on.
Said the blue package penguins always tasted better than the red package ones. I can't say I'm that much of a penguin
aficionado.
Yeah, so I don't know. But I feel like you could have an opinion on this.
I feel as though it's all well, no, because we're going to do a completely different podcast on the what you see makes what you taste different. You know what I mean? So no, it's no different. Okay. It's still the same chocolate.
The red's best because we're the Blood Red podcast.
Well, I would normally say reds weren't. That's the whole thing. If you're going to go down that road, I'd tend to have given somebody else, but I didn't this time.
Well, someone also said, haven't had a penguin in over 20 years. Sorry, Paul. Do they still have crap jokes in them?
Yes, but I can't remember what it was. Yeah. I just threw the wrapper away in a bin.
Bit left field.
Save the planet.
But Paul also asked, we'll stick with him. Any thoughts on the season Xabi Alonso's having at Leverkusen? Incredible season, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? I mean, one of is it 6 points clear or seven? It's something. It's because Bayern Munich lost, didn't they? Done two.
They've only lost one game all season, haven't they?
Leverkusen. And they've hardly drawn any as well. Yeah.
They got a last minute win, didn't they?
They lost one? I don't even think they've lost any, have they? I think they won all six group games in the Europa League. They're through in the cup, and I don't think they've lost a league game. I think they've drawn two or three. That's it. That's the question. Yeah, it's very good. it's very good. Yeah.
Overexcited about former players who become managers because, like, yeah, they haven't lost a game all season.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, that's in the league.
That's what you care about.
They haven't lost a game all season. Yeah. Stop. Which is incredible, isn't it? They've only drawn three times in the league.
It's just
every other game. I mean, I never like to get overexcited because I thought Gerrard did a really good job at Rangers, and I know that isn't the strongest league, but still, if you look at where Rangers were, but I mean, there's good jobs, and then there's pretty incredible.
If you want to be a Liverpool manager and a Real Madrid manager, let's be honest, because he's probably going to end up managing both of them the way he's going.
And then Bayern Munich as well.
Yeah. You need to win stuff. Yeah, and so let's just see what happens. But he can't have done any more than he's doing now, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Gerrard there. He went into a two-team league and it's win the league. Yes, he did it, but they're not going to do it much else. Like, they're going to be first or second. Alonso comes in when Leverkusen were just above the relegation zone. So they're happy to just get into Europe, and he's managed to do that. Then to not only get them in a title race going against Munich, to be clear, not losing games, he certainly made a massive difference there. You look at the managers he's had in his career, he's obviously taken a lot from all of them, and they are some absolute legends. There's every reason to believe he could be the next one if he keeps it going. Win the Bundesliga title, even if he falls short. Better teams, worse teams have fallen short, having gone against Munich over the years. We saw that with Dortmund last year. But if he can step up and do it, you sort of want him to be that next Liverpool manager in waiting.
It's on top of all that, I think great managers have to have an aura about them. And I always think that wherever he's gone in his career, Alonso's had a bit of an aura about him in the classiness, the cleverness, you know, people believe in him, don't they? He's the sort of person you'd follow.
He certainly had an aura in the mix zone when we used to go and speak to him because he used to do this thing. I may have mentioned this on the podcast before, where when you asked him a question, because his English isn't his first language, he was always concentrating on it really, really much. So he'd be like staring at you very intently, almost like the question you're asking is ridiculous, but he was just trying to concentrate. That's the aura I remember. Whenever I think of Alonso, I think of that. Never mind all these goals and stuff. I just remember him looking at me a bit weird, you know, during the very long list of people who've done that.
Yeah.
I beat you on that one, yeah.
There's a couple of other questions from Facebook. Is Thiago going to play if he returns? I think, if he returns, then by
definition, he's playing.
I think the question is he going to get in the team? I think he would be needed because Liverpool are competing on four different fronts.
You've got the injuries now. If Jones misses a couple of games, they're down to three senior players.
And he's got such class, isn't he, that he's not the sort of person that you would leave out. But and then a follow-up question to that from Nigel Buckley on Facebook, who said, should players who are out injured long-term have extra time added onto their contract so they don't leave on a free?
No,
I don't think so, because you don't want to be lumbered with someone.
Exactly. Yeah,
it works both ways, doesn't it? Yeah. I mean, it gives security, but also...
Well, the ultimate example of that was the COVID season, where they did extend the contracts of some players, and then they didn't... all the clubs did, you know, it worked both ways. Players tried to use it to their advantage. So
was it Lallana stayed, but didn't play, so it was just so he could win the trade?
And Klein didn't stay, did he?
Klein would, yeah. Just let go.
Yeah. Right, back to talk about yesterday's game. Thank you for those questions. And if you've got more questions, keep them coming in. I'm keeping an eye on YouTube and our producers sending me the questions from Facebook. So
hopefully more penguin ones.
Please do. If you want to discuss penguins.
More chocolate-based ones. Breakaways, yeah, Kit Kats.
Love a breakaway.
Yeah, breakaways, Kit Kats.
Club biscuits.
Time out. What's wrong with timeout?
Timeout doesn't really go with them, does it? Yeah. You buy them from a different shelf, don't you? Timeout.
Chocolate That's biscuit.
Like blue ribbon. They still do them.
Blue ribbon still
going. Still going. Yeah.
I'd put... I think timeout's a chocolate bar.
I mean, maybe this is... It's got wafer in it.
It has, but you buy it from a different part of the shelf, don't you, in the shop?
And let's be fair, you would know about this. I do. Compared to us. Yeah.
I'm just remembering my packed lunches when I was, a little boy at primary school, and it was club bars or a timeout.
Well, I wasn't packing your lunches.
Can we quickly move on?
Right, some other, themes from the game. McAllister, you both touched upon it. I thought he was superb in the first half. Doyle, he was keeping the ball, operating in their half of the pitch. He really timed his tackles well.
Well, there was an interesting statistic that said that he made 9 tackles, or he attempted 9 tackles. Actually, to be fair, I don't know whether it was made or completed or whatever. Again, didn't read it properly, but I didn't have time to check. But he made more tackles than any Liverpool player in a Premier League game for the last 8 years, which is phenomenal when you think about it. Nice. You know, so I mean, I know midfielders are always going to make more tackles than, or I'd say fullbacks as well, are going to make more tackles than anywhere else on the pitch. But it looked like he'd made that many tackles as well, if that makes sense. Yeah, you weren't surprised when you saw that he'd made that many. That it was the most in 8 years. That was a bit of a surprise, but I think he won the most duels as well. But also he put in more key passes than any other Liverpool player.
He was just doing everything.
Yeah,
it was the way he used the ball after winning it. His passing when he's on song, McAllister, he fizzes the ball, doesn't he? Forwards into pockets of space that really open up attacks. And I thought he did that yesterday.
I'm still dreaming about the pass he played in the first leg against Fulham for the was it the penalty or whatever it was when Jota went down?
Yeah, possibly. My mind doesn't think back that far.
Newcastle.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean,
do you dream about those kind of things often?
Sure, why not?
I think you're not supposed to be able to control your own dreams, to be fair.
alongside him, before we move on from McAllister, I think, Theo, earlier this season, you'd probably say that some of the tackles he was putting in, he wasn't quite getting the timing right. So it shows how he's grown into that role defensively anyway.
Yeah, he's been a bit slow with some of them, wasn't he? But he's obviously learning on the job. Like Liverpool thought they were signing a number 8, and we'll never know how the season would have fared if they'd kept a Fabinho, they kept a Henderson, or if Trent stays or goes into midfield and Bradley had stayed fit. But you're not really having any issues now that McAllister's the one there. When Endo was playing so well before he went away as well, you've got two really good options there. It's almost getting to that point now where, do they need a number 6? You've got those two players who are doing really well. Bacetic will come back from injury. Thiago will come back from injury. Trent can do it. They've suddenly got a lot of options there. And when McAllister's got a bit of everything, if he had pace as well, imagine what everyone would be saying about him. But he's still tracking the ground, making the movements, winning it back with the well-timed sliding tackles. And he's not an old-fashioned holding midfielder that wins the ball and gives it to someone better. No. He can then play that killer pass as well. He's been really great to see, probably since the Man City game. I know he's had a few weeks on the sidelines since then, but that was the game where you go, he can do this role. Yeah. And he's certainly grown in stature since.
Leadership as well, I think. Again, one of the things I think Liverpool always do when they buy, well, they seem to buy good characters, don't they? And this Liverpool 2.0 or Liverpool Reloaded, whatever you want to call it, seems to have good characters throughout, and McAllister seems to have added to that. Curtis Jones, another really good performance from Curtis Jones, and I feel like he's that unsung hero that we now talk about every week, but his passing again is so good. He's always an option. He seems to be involved in goals just before they become...
Well, key part in the first goal. Yeah, bring it on the chest and play it into Jota.
He seems to stick things together, doesn't he, quite well.
Yes, which is why we have to hope he's not injured, basically. He's had enough injury problems over the past 2 seasons. And I know even if he is out, this one will only be slight. But it's come at a bit of a bad time for Liverpool. Mm-hmm. That League Cup game coming up on Wednesday, it's Wednesday, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Days. Yeah. It's Monday, isn't it? Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
And we'll find out tomorrow if Szoboszlai is fit or not.
Yeah. I mean, if Szoboszlai can be back for that, that'll be a bit of a timely return. But then I suppose you could McAllister, go back to him, timely return with Endo, Bradley, timely return with Trent. So some of them, while Liverpool have got a lot of players missing, the returns of some of them has come at quite a good point.
Yeah, well, someone's actually said to us, we still have Man City and Arsenal to play. With everyone fit, what midfield would you choose?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I definitely have McAllister and Curtis Jones in there. There's two.
Yeah.
Now, then you're like, basically, it's down to two players. You're either going to put Szoboszlai in if you want to go attacking, or you put Eddo in if you want to play. Mm-hmm. That kind of, so probably Arsenal away, you put Endo in if you're playing them at home.
It's incredible to say that, isn't it, considering Szoboszlai's start to the season and how highly we all rate him. But
so you're saying you'd have McAllister as an eight for if you're going a bit more defensive?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the midfield Jason has picked. Endo, Mack and Jones is my choice. Theo?
It varies depending on opposition form at the time. Like if we were having this question 2 months ago, we'd all be saying Szoboszlai.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be saying Endo.
They're playing Arsenal and Man City in this question.
Yeah.
Oh, literally in a week or so for Arsenal. I'm still going Szoboszlai, McAllister and Jones, I think. Endo's done really well, but those seem to be the first choice three. Endo's not going to be a long-term option there, even if you get a good 4 years out of him.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I think...
I know that's long-term.
Don't think it's long-term. How long do you think these players play for?
Well, these players, you expect them to be at Liverpool for 8-10 years, aren't you? Some of them.
I think...
Hang on a minute, right? How many of them have actually been there for 8 to 10 years that are playing now?
Salah must be getting close to eight.
No.
Are we not near that yet?
No, he's not. He's six, isn't he? Six and a bit.
2017 to...
It's not eight, yeah.
No, seven.
Yeah.
We're coming up to seven.
Mane never got there. Firmino didn't.
Well, they just
Firmino got to eight, to be fair. Firmino
so it just feels like they're there forever. So, yeah, we're on that peak years.
Well, sorry, just making a note of something.
What are you doing? Don't let us interrupt you. Yeah.
Well, I was trying to think of my midfield, and you just took over with your 8 to 10 year argument. I think Man City, I would play Endo, McAllister, and Jones. Arsenal, I would play
McAllister, Jones, and Szoboszlai.
I would play Endo, Szoboszlai, Jones.
You wouldn't play McAllister?
No, not Arsenal, no.
How literally are we taking this question? Because Endo's not going to be available for Arsenal.
He's asking with everyone fit.
Well, Jones might not be available,
It also depends home and away, you know,
Come on, the question needs to be more specific. Come on, people, sort it out.
Jason, if they're in the Champions League final, what is your front three, your midfield three?
You're playing in the final.
Leverkusen. Right, they could actually play Leverkusen in the Europa League final.
They could, yeah.
Just one touching on the Curtis Jones, the Clivert tackle.
Mm.
Now, I just, for the life of me, cannot understand why Curtis Jones was sent off. To me, it was the exact same tackle. But I don't think Curtis Jones was sending off to begin with.
I thought yesterday's one was worse.
But I think sometimes you can make that contact on someone and it not be a sending off. I think, you know, it depends on the way you make the tackle. His foot roll over the ball and he makes pretty bad contact with Luis Diaz. The same thing happened with Curtis Jones at Tottenham. But again, why send the referee over to the VAR monitor at Tottenham? Nothing was done yesterday. It is, these things don't help. And I try to defend referees a fair bit, but these things don't help the process, do they?
The funny thing is, there was one with Casado as well, wasn't there? I can't remember what game it was. He did exactly the same with Chelsea. No, it was ran before Christmas. And it's because Simon Hooper was the referee. And Simon Hooper was the referee at Tottenham. And on both occasions, he booked the player, did give a red card. Mm-hmm. And it was obviously VAR. And the referee, Andy Madley, he didn't even give a foul. So he wasn't going to send him off. But Paul Tierney was the VAR, and he decided that wasn't worth a look. I agree with you. I don't think Jones should have been sent off. Casado, I don't think, got sent off and shouldn't have been sent off. And I don't think Clivert should have been sent off. But if you want consistency, they've all got to go.
Yeah. And to a man, the explanation after Jones was, yeah, that's the right. You know, all the PGMOL said that it was a sending off. All the media reaction afterwards in terms of the ex-referee.
Well, they couldn't say every decision they made was wrong in that one, could they?
But this is what I mean, though. If you want, like Doddy says, if you want consistency, it'd be different if they said, OK, we got that one wrong. But they said they got that one right. So by their standards, the one yesterday, he at least should have been referred.
The issue is VAR was supposed to be to clear up the clear and obvious, and the fact that there's all this debate about these decisions, they're not clear and obvious. Mm-hmm. It varies on watching it in slow motion, watching it live, where he makes the contact, how much contact he makes on the ball, how high the foot is, and you can have all three of us having different opinions, and one of you's got to make the decision, and then the referee's got to check the monitor and everything. It's not clear and obvious. you see either stick with your instinct and you do what the initial decision was for Jones, just to book in, or you try and re-referee games, which is not something anyone wants to see.
Well, I'm glad he stayed on,
but the reality is he shouldn't.
Yeah, that's my frustration with the Jones one, is they shouldn't have re-refereed that. The yellow card was the right decision, and the fact that they re-refed it annoyed me at the time, and it annoys me yesterday that they didn't then re-ref that. I mean, I'd rather not see them re-ref anything, but you know, it is quite maddening. But we'll move on from that quite quickly, because there's a couple more positives that I really want to talk about. Ibrahima Konate, Theo, you touched on him before. He was just really, really good. The block he made, I don't remember who it was on.
Slanky.
Yeah. I mean, Van Dijk loved that, didn't he? He was giving him a big pass, a big hug, and really geeing him up. But again, Konate's taking a bit of time, I think, to get back to his best. But this, when he puts it together, he's one hell of a young defender, isn't he?
Defensively, he's got a bit of everything. He's got the pace. He's good on the ball. We're seeing a bit more of the Matip runs from him, carrying it forward. Mentioning Matip, he certainly stepped up since they lost Matip, and that's what you needed. As Doyle mentioned at the start of the podcast about rhythm, Konate's benefiting from there because he's not in and out the side. Maybe when you've got three games in a week, you take him out of one because you've still got that seed in the back of your head that you need to protect him because of the injury past. But he's certainly stepping up now and being a lead defence. He certainly is when he's got a Quanter alongside him. Mm. But then when he's next to Van Dijk, it's just getting these next levels. But when he can do a bit of everything, he's still young. He's going to get so much better. We're seeing Van Dijk now in his early 30s getting back to his best. And we say centre-backs can keep going well until their late 30s. If you look at a Thiago Silva, Konate is just the star for him.
Yeah. And Conor Bradley, Doyle. A really, really good performance from him. I thought not just for the fight that he put in defensively, and obviously they had a real go at him early doors and he got to grips with that, but attacking-wise, he showed real composure at times, didn't he?
What was actually funny about Conor Bradley is that when he got mentioned beforehand, he's making his Premier League debut, it was like, is he? He just felt as though he'd played loads of games already, and then he was the first Northern Irish player to play for Liverpool in 70 years. Which is ridiculous when you think about it.
It's crazy.
It is a bit odd. Yeah. You tell you about me stuff, thanks.
Is that
Conor Bradley stuff? Yeah. It didn't make it into the paper though, did it? So anyway.
You weren't on yesterday though, that's gonna be your excuse.
I did read everything else.
he to start was a little bit unsure, I think, which is perhaps understandable. But second half, I mean, the fact that he was actually playing on the wing that we were sat next, sat by, that gave us a good, you know, idea of what he was doing. And he was playing so high up.
Yeah.
But he could play that high up because he could get back so quickly.
Yeah.
He's very, very fast. And I think people don't, unless you actually see it for yourself, you don't really get onto it. The more games he plays, the more obvious it'll become over time. And he played wing back for Bolton, didn't he, last season? Yeah. And that was more or less what he was playing in a way. They probably just said to him, just do what you did at Bolton. Go on, crack on. And
he'll score goals and get assists.
Well, he should have scored, shouldn't he? Klopp said after the game with a header. Yeah. And he got one assist, kind of, with the Jota thing. I think against Fulham, he could have had an assist with the Nunes chance, which was saved, you remember?
Yes.
Towards the end. So he couldn't have done much more. I mean, Klopp was made up with him after the game, and rightly so. He was just, again, a player who Liverpool's picked up from Northern Ireland about 3 or 4 years ago. They identified him as somebody who could do the job that Klopp wants from a right back. He's an example of somebody who Liverpool have used the loan market correctly. He's got his games. He's good enough to play for a Bolton team that got to the League One playoffs and won the EFL Trophy. As I said last time, he played in front of 80,000 at Wembley. So he's got the experience. He's a Northern Ireland international. Just now a matter of getting more games under his belt. And with Trent out for probably Wednesday, possibly. Either way, Trent will play against Norwich in the FA Cup, so he's going to be playing then as well.
He's still going to get games, though. It's not like Owen Beck on the other side, where Robertson and Tsimikas come back. You worry where he's going to get those minutes. Bradley is going to play plenty of times in the second half of the season because we're seeing Trent's ability to just go in midfield. He is now that player you could put on at right back to give you that width. I know Joe Gomez has been doing that.
Well, Gomez can go to centre-back now.
Gomez can go to centre-back. They've got so much strength in players who are versatile here as well, and they're all in form. He's not going to be going anywhere anytime soon.
Right, keep it brief because I've got four more things to ask you before we finish. First one, yes or no answer from Paul. Here's one for the three. Will Gomez score that elusive goal by the end of the season?
Yes.
Or Yes. Good. Confident for Joe Gomez and his Adidas adverts. Liverpool 7, Arsenal 1.
Yep.
Was a result that people might not be aware of this weekend, but an incredible FA Youth Cup result for Liverpool's under-18s. Theo, and you were there?
I was. Yeah, they played very, very well. First half was actually quite a lot more even than the scoreline would suggest. Arsenal created a number of chances. They just weren't clinical in front of goal. But Liverpool took the chances that came their way. It was like a 4-2-3-1 formation with Dans playing as a number 10. You had Morrison on one wing, Cone Doherty on the other side. Mm-hmm. Kumas has played a lot in the 21s this season. We've seen him on the bench for the first team. He was with them in pre-season as well. And he drops down the level, he just goes and gets a hat-trick. He made it look so easy. Effortless finishes. Dans knocks down one, he just rifles it in, linking up really well with his teammates. Cone Doherty was brilliant down the left-hand side. The second half, Dans decides, I actually want to score a couple of goals as well, and he does. If you've not seen his free kick, search out the highlights, I'm assuming, on the club website somewhere. That is an amazing free kick that wouldn't look out of place in the Premier League. And then a little shout out to Trey Anonhihi. We gave a shout out on the Q&A, didn't we, earlier this month? As you said, I think it was you, or was it Gorsty, you said he was the one to watch?
I think it was Gorsty.
But yeah, he was brilliant in midfield. It was a more withdrawn role from what we've seen from him so far, but he's still pressing so high up the pitch, which leads to the second goal for Liverpool. And then he plays this amazing long pass for Cone Doherty's second. I'm losing track here of the order of these goals. But yeah, he was really good in midfield as well. The four players that we've been speaking about most were the ones that stood out, and that's not a surprise. But then Arsenal, they were beaten finalists last year, so to go and put seven past them shows they're contenders for this cup now.
Yeah, really exciting stuff. Right, let's pick our team quickly for Fulham, which we can't forget. Liverpool have a game in the best world's greatest cup competition. I have to get it right. the League Cup on Wednesday night.
Is it better than the Champions League?
It's the world's greatest cup competition.
Better than the World Cup.
Better than the world. It's the world's greatest cup competition. So, yeah.
It's in the Kelleher.
Name. It's in the name. Kelleher.
Oh, we are. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, Kelleher.
Yeah, Kelleher.
Conor Bradley.
Yeah.
I actually think it'll be Van Dijk, Canate, and Gomez.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think
I agree. Because it'll be Beck and Quanser for the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so your midfield.
Well, is there anyone left, is there? So it'll be McAllister. I don't think Jones will be fit. I think Szoboszlai will have to play. And I think I've missed a player out.
Gravenberch.
He's got to play as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't argue with it. Elliot played quite well yesterday, I thought, in patches. So, but I think if Szoboszlai's fit, then Szoboszlai plays. So, yeah, I'd probably go along with that.
Yeah, it depends on the injury news we get tomorrow, who's back and who's not. But those are the available three that we know at the moment, so those are the three you pick.
Yeah, yeah. I think if Szoboszlai isn't fit, then Elliot's got to play there.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, Elliot over Gravenberch, is that I feel like Elliot will keep the ball better and Liverpool don't need to win this game.
I suppose, thinking outside the box, Gakpo could go in midfield.
True. Mm.
Yeah. Doesn't give him any attacking options, really. Yeah. Senior
they'll
on the
need people from the bench, yeah.
I think they'll want to rotate up front, so I think...
Especially there's a chance he could go to extra time.
Yeah. I think Gakpo plays up front.
Do you?
What do you think? Front three.
Would like you to ask Theo first, while I'm thinking.
Diaz can start because he came off early, so you imagine a few more minutes in the legs. Gakpo starts probably because he didn't play or didn't start this one. And then you're not bothered who it is between Nunes and Jota. They get goals, they make things happen.
Yeah.
Both in form. I'm happy with either of them starting up front.
Make a decision then, Theo.
let's say Nunes starts, can be all chaotic, and then if they need a goal, Jota can come on and win it.
Nunes, Gakpo, Diaz.
Yeah, I think I'd go along with that. I mean, there is a shout to start Jota in his form, but I think ultimately Nunes will keep them on the back foot, and that's what you want. Score prediction, go.
I'm going to just elaborate a little bit. I don't think people realise how big a game this is for Fulham. I genuinely don't think they'd realise. They haven't been to a cup final since 1975.
Do you remember that one?
No, I wasn't even born then. That's how long ago it was. Even you weren't born then. They've never been to a League Cup semi-final before. Probably Chelsea are going to beat Middlesbrough on Tuesday, which means that they've got the chance of playing their hated neighbours at Wembley in a cup final. And they're only getting beat by one goal when they could have been losing by 3 or 4, given the way the game ended. Yeah. Obviously, Liverpool weren't very good in the first half, and Fulham could have easily gone 2-0 up.
Are you predicting a semi-final defeat here?
No, I'm just saying it's going to be a very, very tough game for Liverpool. They didn't do well at Fulham last year, got away with a 2-2. Since they've had a 1-1, they've had trouble winning games there. So I wouldn't be surprised. And Liverpool don't need to win, though. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's a draw. I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool lost. But if it went to penalties, I think Liverpool would win.
So what is your prediction?
I'm going to say they'll lose and they'll win on penalties.
Lose and win on penalties. I'm going to say 1-1 gets them through.
I'll go 2-0.
2-0 gets them through. So let's hope so. We'll be back on Friday to discuss that game. We'll be going live on various days throughout the week before then. So to stick with the Blood Red channel, give us a like, give us a subscribe. And thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate your support. We will see you soon. Ta-ra.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.